At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
And thank you all so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, the master of disaster, the king of kung fu theater himself, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios fighting off a possible cold. I'm getting a head cold, and it's because of the weather change. It's crazy. It was 85 degrees yesterday. Today, it's 40.
I can't believe anything would live in a head that's that ugly.
That's difficult as well. Yeah, 45-degree weather change in
it's
24
fun,
hours.
Isn't it? It's fun.
Oh, it's not fun. Whatever's blown in from Canada, it's in my nasal cavity.
Yeah, I saw
my allergies are killing me.
I saw that there was a big pollen alert. I'm like, well, this ought to be fun.
Yeah. You'd think if you lived in an area long enough, you'd become used to the area, but
nope.
It just doesn't work that way
does
for whatever
work.
Reason. Yeah, man, are you getting ready for the Four Nations tournament that fires up this next week?
Oh, I saw that. Look, I'll have to watch some of it just so I can keep up with your giddiness of how it all goes.
Yeah, they're putting the NHL's on pause for 2 weeks because of it.
That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Olympics, right? So it's going to be the best players from, of course, you have to play for the country you're from.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it'll be the best Americans.
We're talking about hockey, folks.
Canadian, Sweden, and Finland. Russia, they're being boycotted because of the war.
So. Yeah.
And it's not necessarily, like, I looked at some of the rosters. It's not necessarily the best players, but it's going to be fun to watch.
And it's also a good break for those that have been playing that aren't going to go play in it. We're like, whew, I can
do
a little fishing.
I'm sure there's a lot of golfing that'll be going on, right?
So as I introduced Kyle with the King of Kung Fu Theater, we were laughing about that recently, and we're actually have some playing in the background right now. What are we watching, Kyle?
This is Shaolin versus Llama, one of my favorites.
Nice. So another thing that is him and I both remembered and we shared as kids is we both grew up watching this that used to be on Channel 11 here in Texas
on or Saturdays.
At least where we're at. Which was CBS, and it would come on Saturdays. And we're talking, this is back in the early 80s when this was popping. And I remember watching all these. And then now, of course, it's something that we've watched literally our whole lives and I still watch them.
Oh, I think it's fantastic.
I can't help it.
Of course, as a kid, I thought people really fought like that. So it kind of bummed me out when I realized that they don't. But I still enjoy watching them. The choreography is amazing.
That's the part that I love the most. It's just all the crazy fight choreography and all the crazy stunts of them running up walls and all this. It's great.
Well, for those who have never been in a real fight, when you get in a real fight, you're exhausted about 45 seconds in. The fact that these guys can do this for 30 minutes straight is amazing. You know what I'm saying?
Just the cardio alone of them flying through jumping and flipping and working, especially when you bring out the weapons.
You got any big plan? You have a big Super Bowl party you're planning?
No, I legitimately forgot it was even coming on till I was.
Yeah, it's coming
somebody
up.
Somebody said something about it.
I don't ever watch.
Yeah,
I don't care about NFL football. I know that's shocking to most. I don't care. I don't watch it. Not at all. I could care less. I like college football, but I don't watch any NFL games.
Mm-mm.
So
I haven't watched an NFL game. I've seen bits and pieces of one. Like if you're just flipping through, oh, what's happening? Okay, that's the score. And then I go, that's about as far as it gets.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can't help it because there's such a thing as college football.
We recently put up a video on Patreon for people to take a look at. So we're trying to work things out. I know we've been talking about this for years now, but we finally got all the doodads and equipment ready for filming. And so we've been experimenting. So that's going to be coming up, folks.
Yeah, there'll be several experimentation video shows on Patreon.
And I totally get it. If you don't want to
rolling in,
if you don't want to look at my ugly face, I totally get it. I got a face, a voice for radio, not a face for TV. You know what I'm saying? But let's get into the show. Cam.
Yes. Hit me with it.
Seeing is believing, right?
Word.
Or are there some things that are just too fantastic and therefore beyond belief?
You know what I think it is sometimes?
What is it?
I think before you get into this, I think you could see something that would be so mind-breakingly fantastic that you really couldn't compute. You couldn't process what you were staring at.
It happens, especially with the stories that we uncover on the show to a lot of people. There's people that have told me that when they report their sighting that like they I must have had a break in my mental capacity because it can't be what I saw, but I saw it and I remember it.
That's me looking for the ketchup in the refrigerator, apparently, according to my family.
Well, there was a fella named Christopher Walker, Christopher Walker.
About here we go.
Who wholly believes that him and a group of friends witnessed a crazy sight back on midnight or close to midnight on July 4th, 1990, when he was 14 years old. Now, I believe you were 14 years old in 1990. I was 13. Word. So it kind of puts it in perspective, right? Same age as Cam.
Heck yeah.
Chris, who is now 49, is a no-nonsense type of fella. He's a family man with a wife and two children and has worked in the construction industry for more than two decades. So basically what I'm saying is he's not the type of guy to lie or make up stories, but he is convinced that him and his friends witnessed something so strange that it's hard to comprehend. Now,
see, the difference between he and I is I am a nonsense kind of guy.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't completely. Even mean to make that into a poem. Wow. I'm going to sit back and enjoy. I'm just going to bathe in this.
Chris and his buddies had been sitting on a stack of old skids behind a factory building located on the east side of Henderson, Kentucky, that night that this happened. Now, one of them had pilfered a pack of Camel filterless cigarettes, and they passed them around, as we did in the 90s. And the group of kids were just sitting there, you know, telling stories, telling jokes and lies.
Were they wides? Are they Camel wides?
They said they just said there was Camel filterless cigarettes.
France.
When all this happened. Now, Chris was busily engaged in seemingly his endless endeavor to be cooler than his teenage buddies, tougher, braver, and his actions were cut short by a loud banging sound. They all turned to look and see what the heck, what was going on, what's making this noise. And about 30 feet away, they saw a wooden crate sitting atop a rusted old trash dumpster. Now, they said the crate was moving each time the noise rang out, this loud banging. And the youth finally came to realize that whatever was making the banging noise was inside that said crate. And they said it sounded like something was trying to beat its way out.
The Creepshow monster.
That's what I was thinking,
dude,
right?
Dude, don't do it.
They said the crate started rocking back and forth until finally it toppled from the edge of the dumpster. It fell to the ground and crashed and broke open, right? Now, what happened next was the most frightening moment of their young lives.
Only one person survived.
Slowly rising from the wooden debris was a dwarf-like creature.
Oh, no.
Covered from head to toe, with the exception of its face and hands. In short, it had short, dark hair, uniform in length. The street lamp just down on the corner illuminated this thing and reflected red eyes. This creature was crazy. He said fully erect, it stood only about 3.5 feet tall. It began looking around frantically, turning this way and that, as if it was disoriented or lost. Now, the boys were just staring at this thing, wide-eyed. They were glued to their spot by the numbing fear by watching this thing. They said it had pointed ears like a pig's. It had red eyes and a flat, wide nose. It had a mangy look about it. Some of the hair on its body was thin or bald, and the skin beneath was dark brown, while on its bare face and hands, the skin seemed a lighter shade. Now, this group of boys watched this thing. He said it continued to look around bewilderedly for about 10 seconds. Then, when the reality of what they were seeing sunk in, their paralysis broke, and they all got out of there, Cam. They fled the scene with much haste. He said they ran all the way back to Chris's house, which is about a half a mile away, without stopping. Now, of course, when they got home, no one believed them. I mean, they told others about their strange encounter, you know, the next day at school. No one believed them there either. But he swears that him and a small group of friends, they saw this thing. Now, this strange duende or gnome or even troll-like creature, he said was muscular. He said it had bowed legs, and it was wearing ragged-looking clothing. He said a few days later, there was actually another sighting when another anonymous person that he didn't know was driving over the Washington Street Bridge, which spanned the Canoe Creek Reservoir, I guess, near Lincoln Avenue. Now, this witness heard, they said, what sounded like a woman screaming in pain. So they slowed down to get a better look. That's when they saw a small, dark, hair-covered little thing run out from under a bridge on two legs. He said it ran up into the mouth of a large drainage tunnel. That's when they lost sight of it. This thing was described as being short, stocky with red eyes, and like I said earlier, pointed ears. There have not been any other sightings in that area At least none of them have been reported because I've looked.
But it got loose. It got away.
Somebody had boxed the thing up in this crate on the dumpster.
They were trying to get rid of it. They summoned it in their portal and was like, man, that's not what we were trying to summon. Quick, grab it. And they stuffed it in the box and was like, just go set it by the dumpster. Somebody will take it.
This was, even to this day, Chris is like, I know it sounds crazy. It sounds like something out of a horror movie, but we saw it. And it wasn't just him. It was him and multiple people. He talks to some of those friends, even to this day.
Story's exactly the same.
And every time they speak, because, you know, they don't talk all the time.
They bring it up.
They bring it up. Yep.
Well, just like that, though, like not joking about it, but the only way it could have gotten there is somebody put it there. That means somebody is well aware of that thing's existence when they set it out by the dumpster.
Yeah, I always think of people that buy these illegal animals from the black market, like you buy a pet tiger or you buy a...
some crossbred orangutan.
Somebody out there is selling Duendi, and somebody bought one, they raised it, it got too big.
They had to turn the Duendi
loose. It was irritable, it was messing up the house, wasn't listening, and they were like, you know what?
We got to get this Duendi out of here.
We're getting rid of this thing. Just like people drop off pythons in the Everglades, now they're out of control. Somebody was trying to throw away a Duendi.
Trying to throw away a Duendi.
Now it's living in a drainage canal somewhere in
Kentucky. We've got trash bag Duendis. Now escaped trash bag Duendis. This was a crate Duendi.
Crazy. Crazy.
Man, that
story.
Thing is wild.
If real, crazy.
If yeah, exactly. But you know what? There's enough people that have seen it. Like what? Like we've said before, you're not really going to misidentify something when there's a whole bunch of y'all standing around. One of you thinks it's something else. Another guy goes, hey, that's whatever this is, jogs your memory. Oh, yeah, it is a certain kind of monkey or something. Like, I get it. But everybody was like, I don't even know what that is.
And, you know, we've talked about when you read old stories of people encountering indigenous people and they always dismiss what the indigenous people believe. We always talk about how that's foolish. Mm-hmm. If you go to South America and stuff, the Duendis, it's not – it doesn't seem fantastic to them at all. It's a real thing. They're
they exist, yeah.
So – that's what I mean.
And this took place in 1990.
1990.
There wasn't a lot of video from your cell phone in 1990. There wasn't
cell phones.
There you go. There wasn't a lot of television shows that was all about pranks and all that. That hadn't really become a thing yet.
And you've seen the footage, like security camera footage from South America. Where you'll see like a gnome or a Duendi run across the street and stuff.
I love those.
I do too.
Because I want it to be real. Here's something I don't want to be real. This is something a little unsettling. I think you're going to really enjoy this. It says, I grew up with a very outdoorsy family in southern Indiana. Now, we often went camping and hiking in the summer. My mother told this story to my sister and myself about the time she went camping with my dad before we were born. This is what she has to say. I was in my tent, and it was the middle of the night, perhaps 1 a.m., and I had woken up to go to the bathroom, just like normal. I was about to unzip the tent when I heard a small scratching sound. I paused. It was slow, deliberate, crunchy, digging kind of sound. It was too rhythmic for an animal, so after making sure it wasn't your father who was sharing the tent, I unzipped the corner of the door and I peeked out. The moon was just bright enough for me to see a young woman squatting right next to our little two-man tent, digging at the ground with her bare hands. Even your father was scared. So he went out and shone a flashlight on her and told her to go back to wherever she had made camp. The woman got up silently, leaving a 4-inch deep hole next to the tent, and started walking away. I went outside, relieved myself, and then got back into my sleeping bag. A few moments later, I was awoken again by a clattering sound of a person or animal walking around where we had put our stuff. I looked outside again, and the woman was crouching low, walking around our stuff and looking at things the way a monkey might. Well, your father stepped out of the tent, shined the flashlight on her again, and she faced him. He asked her kindly to leave their stuff alone, but she just stood there, dirty and neglected looking, but clearly not malnourished, staring at his light. He gave up and went back to our tent. Soon we heard her digging again at her little hole, which was literally 6 inches and 2 pieces of thin nylon away from my head. I shouted for her to go away, and she ran away in an animalistic kind of way and never returned. I fell back to asleep, and in the morning our stuff was scattered, but nothing was stolen. My mother and father never did find out who the woman was. My mother believed that she may have been a feral person. They did report the incident to the local police the next day, but were never contacted afterwards. H.
Wow. Yeah, you talk about there's lots of sightings and reports of feral humans living in the Smoky Mountains, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I've got something here that kind of keys off of that, all right?
Okay.
Now, I know you've always collected knives and never really meant it to be a collection. It's just we've always had knives. We love them, so we've always got a bunch. I know your favorite is the Swiss Army knife because it's great at everything, but it's good at everything, but not great at one thing. So Lon's got this posted about a Swiss Army company encounter, a Witcher in the remote Alps.
Okay.
Get a load of this. It says, this happened while I was doing my army service in Switzerland in the Alps. Now, I'm not allowed to talk about what we were doing, but I'll try to keep things clear. My company had installed a huge antenna, and it had to be guarded by two soldiers day and night. We were on top of a hill far away from any city and near a huge forest. It was 1800 hours, and I had just started my watch of 6 hours with another soldier. Everything went fine. We smoked our cigarettes, kept ourselves occupied until our watch ended at midnight. Then we received a call from our superior, and he told us that one of the soldiers that was supposed to take the watch couldn't come, so one of us had to stay for another watch of 6 hours. So we tossed a coin to know who would stay from midnight to 6 in the morning with temperatures at negative 20 Celsius. Of course, I lost and had to wait for the other soldier to come and join me for night watch. They sent another soldier, but not the best because I knew he would sleep all night when I saw him climbing the hill with his sleeping bag. Well, and that's what he did. He immediately took place in the tent and fell asleep. It was the coldest, longest night of my life, but nothing special about it. The weird part happened in the morning. We received another call from our superior, and he told us that we had an NBC exercise. It means that we have to wear all day long our anti-chemical suit. I don't know the English word for it. The one with a gas mask and everything that goes with it. I was really upset and exhausted because I wasn't able to sleep with that thing on, and sleep was my only reward for that 12-hour watch. Well, I got out of the tent, and this is where I saw something that still scares me to this day. There was a woman standing next to the antenna, and she wasn't moving. She was just standing there, 5 meters from the tent. I couldn't see her face because the sun starting to rise behind her. I knew she was a woman because she had really long hair, and she had curves. Now, I remember that we were in the, or you need to remember that we were in the middle of nowhere, and this lady was just standing there, not moving like she was frozen. So I started to freak out, and I called the other guy to show him what I was looking at. I don't know why, but he wasn't scared at all, and he told her to leave because she wasn't allowed there. But she didn't make a move. She just stood there looking at us, or at least in our direction. I was so confused about how a woman could ignore two soldiers telling her to leave a forbidden area. I mean, we are in Switzerland. The army is not that impressive, I know, but people usually do this kind of thing, or don't do this kind of thing. They would just, move away, especially when it's 6 a.m. And what was she doing in the middle of nowhere? Obviously not dressed for this whole cold weather. Now, how long was she standing there, and how did she end up here? I didn't hear any footsteps. So many questions went through my mind at that moment. The other soldier didn't think twice and started walking towards her. When he almost reached her, she started running very fast. She ran directly into the forest. I saw her getting deep down into the forest, and then she disappeared from our sight. I'm a really rational thinker. I question everything and think that there's always an explanation. For me, the explanation is that she was simply a jogger because of the way she ran to the forest. But almost 3 minutes had passed between the first time I saw her and the moment she started running away. 3 minutes of not moving at all, looking at me dressed in something really tight with negative 20 degrees and in the middle of nowhere. Thank God there was someone else there with me because nobody would have believed this, Izzy.
Wow. That's odd. Or was it even a person? Or was it a ghost or something?
Yeah, you know what I mean? And he's like, what was she doing there? Like, what is it? That's what makes you start wondering, like, is this human? Because if it's human, like, what is the human doing out there?
Yeah, I don't know. What a bizarre story.
Very, very bizarre.
That is cool. Check this out. It says back in 2012. Well, you know what? Before we get into it, let's take a break. We need to pay some bills around here. Let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to tell you this story. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Yeah, let's get back to this story that I was about to tell. Back in 2012, two friends, we'll call them D and J, went to Look Rock. Now, it's a concrete observation tower at the top of Chilhowee Mountain in Blount County, sorry, I don't know, Tennessee. To get to this tower, you have to park in a small pull-off and walk a paved trail half a mile up the mountain. Now, I've been up this tower many times, and there's usually some kind of energy in the air. You can't see it, but boy, you can feel it. It's like the woods themselves have acquired sentience, and they're just barely tolerating your presence. Anyway, this particular trip was eerily quiet. Typically in the woods, you can hear woodsy sounds like cicadas and rustling in the trees and the occasional animal. But this night, nah, it was silent. Going back to my simile, it's like the sentient woods were terrified of something and were paralyzed with fear. The trip up the mountain was uneventful, apart from the general air of creepiness. We went up to the tower and sat there talking for a couple of hours. Finally, around 3 a.m. or so, we decided it was time to wrap it up. We began the trip back down. Now, at the base of the tower, there are a couple of flattish boulders, about 6 feet or so in diameter, placed as decoration, I guess. What I saw on the boulder was the start of a terrifying night. Nobody else in my group noticed what squatted on the boulder was a solid black form about 4 or 5 foot tall with deeply glowing red eyes. It stared at us for a second, then vanished into thin air. Assuming my eyes were just messing with me, I reluctantly carried on past the boulders. The feeling of uneasiness followed us up until about the halfway point on this trail. There's a point where the trail turns 90 degrees to the right when going back down. Now, the trail you're walking on continues forward, but it's just an ATV access for the rangers. This is in the Smoky Mountains National Park, I remind you. About 20 feet or so before the turn, I noticed an extra pair of footsteps. There were only three of us, but four sets of footsteps. I stopped and looked, and right behind Jay was a 7-foot-tall heat distortion. Like whenever you look at a flaming grill over a summer day, it was vaguely human-shaped. As with the other form on the boulder, after looking at it for a few seconds, it vanished. Now, at this point, we double-timed it back to the car. They hadn't seen it, but they felt it. Halfway down the trail, there's a spot where one tree has fallen into the split trunk of another tree, so it forms kind of a triangle against the ground. At the top of the triangle, the same crouched black form with deep red eyes was there. Again, it vanished after us looking at it. We made it back down to the truck. Everything in our minds was screaming, "Run!" We hauled butt down to the foothills pathway until we made it back to the highway. From there, the trip was uneventful. We dropped Jay off at his house and proceeded to Dee's house, which is about 15 minutes away. As I was pulling out of Dee's driveway, his phone rang. He answered it, turned pale, and flagged me down. Something had happened at Jay's house. We booked it back to Jay's, where we found every light in his house on. We went in and found him in bed with a Bible in one hand and a .45 ACP in the other. Now, Jay's bedroom faces a streetlight. Also in his room, he has a nightlight, a clock, and a stereo, all of which keep his room fairly well lit. He went to bed, then the room had suddenly gone dark. He could still see the streetlight, the clock, the stereo, etc., and they were still lit. But they cast no glow into the room. He said he couldn't even see his hand in front of his face. He went on to say that something had put its hand on his throat and growled in his face, then left. By the time we got there, it had already left. Just to be sure, we lined the doors and windows with salt. I had read somewhere that salt keeps stuff away. We never saw or heard from the thing again, and to this day, we have no idea what it was. We've been back to the tower several times since, but it's never been the same. The woods have always seemed quiet and afraid. T. So they saw like a glimmer man that manifest into what sounded like a demon.
That's wild.
But I've never heard of a glimmer man actually like assaulting somebody, you know, grabbing somebody by the throat or anything. I don't know. Or were there two things? Was the demon up there and then the glimmer man was like his guardian angel and it was protecting them from this demon?
Or was the demon controlling, or the glimmer man was controlling the demon?
Could be that too.
There's right? so many possibilities.
There's
so many possibilities.
Very odd story.
I got something that's going to kind of key into the last one about finding the little fella busting out of the box. D writes in with this. It says, back when I was 5 or 6 in the mid 80s, we lived in Rutland County, Vermont.
Okay.
I bet it was beautiful up there.
I bet it is. Still.
Yeah, I need to go check that out. Says there was a marshy area behind our house separated by a small wooded area. And I remember that almost every night for about a couple weeks, waking up to strange lights in that wooded area behind the house. My room was on the second floor of the house facing the rear towards the wooded area. So I could just see the edge of this marshy area through the trees during the day. My parents' room was directly across the hall facing the front of the house. I remember going into my parents' room and telling them about the lights, but my mom would always send me back to bed without checking. I got scared and that I got so scared that I would hide under my bed when the lights were happening. Around this same time, I started seeing small bipedal creatures that stood about 2.5 foot tall with large black eyes
coming out
of the woods and trying to get into the house.
Ugh.
When I told my parents about them, they would just say that they were bad dreams and not to worry. Almost every night after seeing the lights, they would come out of that marshy wooded area, try to get into the house, or I would hide under my bed, too scared to do anything else. Eventually, the lights stopped, and they stopped coming out of the woods. But my parents still think that I was just having reoccurring nightmares.
Oh, I can't imagine anything being more scary than that.
But it's, I love the thought of those, it's orbs, like will-o-wisps, right?
Right.
But then it's like, I'm seeing these lights. And then out come the, yeah, the grays. That is unbelievable. No. But they're hairy, like furry. That's what they're talking about, is it's not like a full gray, like 2.5 foot tall with large black eyes, and they're hairy, furry creatures coming out. Tribbles, isn't that what those things were?
Man, I don't remember. I know what you're talking about. What?
Pretty sure that's what it was. So that's what's busting up out of there.
That's
a little unsettling.
Hair-covered grays.
Hair-covered. I got another one for you. Swamp stuff here. P sends in, it says, so, this wasn't something I witnessed. I was told this story by one of the men who allegedly saw it. For context, this guy had run with some questionable crowds and did what jobs he had to do to make money at times, if you get my drift. So, he's got a lot of stories. I mostly consider this a tall tale, but there is still enough of it that makes me wonder what if. According to him, we'll call him Zed for the sake of the story, he'd been finishing up some work down in Louisiana back in the late 90s with his buddy and had a few days to kill, namely to get some fishing and hunting in, albeit out of season. One of the guys that they had worked with gave them directions to a spot way back in the swamps and marshes, or the bayou as it's more commonly called, that they could do what without risking being caught by the fish and game agents. He said one of the best things about this spot was that there was, oddly enough, never any alligators there. Bit of a red flag on that one. So anyways, one fine morning they sat out in their boat before the sun was up, navigating their way through the swamps. And from what he described, this was a section that was close to the Mississippi border. Routes were used by smugglers to move various products across state lines. They finally arrived at the spot before a few hours, or the spot after a few hours and some detours, their way of saying that they'd gotten lost, turned off the motor of the boat, and started fishing. The trees were just thick enough to prevent you from being able to see from overhead, being seen from overhead, and they were essentially in a huge inlet that was somewhat sheltered from the rest of the bayou and had the start of some solid land along two sides of it. And by solid land, that also meant that you had to walk across 10 or 15 feet of muck that could suck your boots off before you got to solid ground. So according to Zed, the day was progressing and fishing wasn't going great, but they still had beer, so they weren't really inclined to go anywhere. They both noted that, as the guy had said, that there were no alligators. Normally, you could spot them lurking around or sunning themselves, but they were just utterly gone from that spot, as were most of the big fish, it seemed. It was at this point that they observed a herd of feral hogs emerge from the undergrowth on one side of the lagoon and make their way to the muck, as if what was described before. There they commenced to start rolling and rooting in it till their heart's content. Zed and his buddy slowly angled their boat closer, as if that way, or it says, as they had sidearms with them and certainly had no issues with getting wild pork instead of fish, if the opportunity was there. The hogs were leery but not afraid, keeping the humans in their line of sight as they frolicked. Zed saw that they had no real way to get a hog, even if they shot it there, so they just floated along and watched for a good opportunity. But instead, they saw something else entirely. According to Zed, that's when they saw the mud start to move. Now, he knew instantly it wasn't an alligator, as an alligator would be flailing around in the mud trying to reach the hogs. Whatever this thing was, it was covered in mud. The only way he could describe it was something was pushing its way through the muck like a mostly submerged bulldozer, creeping up on the pigs. They watched as it slowly approached a cluster of hogs who had noticed the movement but seemed more curious about what it was than afraid. One of them, a pig that Zed estimated between 150 and 175 pounds, was the furthest out in the muck and made the mistake of attempting to sniff at whatever this intruder was. Zed said that the quicker than you could react, something lunged out from the thing and attached to the pig's head and face. As the pig thrashed and tried to jump back, letting out the most blood-curdling scream they'd ever heard, the thing was hauled partially out of the muck and came into better view. Zed realized it was an alligator snapping turtle of proportions that he had never heard of. He's seen the one that they keep at the Bass Pro Shop that got big enough that it cracked its tank and they had to get a new one. And he said that was like comparing a chihuahua to a pit bull. It was clearly, or it was still partially obscured by the muck that was covering it, but Zed swore its shell had to be at least the size of the hood of a Volkswagen Beetle. He was an extreme car enthusiast, so he knew his vehicles. His best guess on its weight was well over 500 pounds and was now backing up into deeper water, dragging the pig with it. Zed said from what that they could see, the turtle's head was so big that it was able to fit its jaws partially around the pig's skull, and its beak was now essentially acting as a meat hook. Apparently, it was about a 30-second fight to drag the pig into the lagoon. Zed said it was clear the pig never stood a chance. The turtle dragged it out into the water. The pig made one last desperate attempt to break free. Apparently hearing something screaming underwater one last time is as unnerving as you'd imagine, and Hollywood doesn't get the sound right. It then just went absolutely quiet after that. According to Zed, he and his buddy sat there for a minute processing what they had just seen, and except for the froth on top of the water and the stirred up mud, there was no sign anything had just happened. The other hogs had fled as soon as their comrade was attacked, and except for some bugs, it was almost completely silent. They couldn't say why, but Zed said they booked it out of there to something that something was off and it felt wrong to be there. It wasn't like they could go to the Fish and Game and describe what they had seen, but they did fill in an acquaintance on why there were no alligators in that area. And as far as Zed knew, nobody else has ever seen this colossal turtle and came forward to talk about it. Zed said that it was big enough that if it caught a person unaware, it could easily overpower and kill a human the same way it did that pig. And again, this is how the story was told to me. It's not my story, and I'm inclined to mostly believe it's a tall tale or an exaggerated one. But it does highlight that you don't need something as fanciful as a skunk ape or a Bigfoot to be nervous about what might be lurking just out of sight.
I agree. I like the idea of it. A giant, you know, prehistoric type turtle, snapping turtle. We know those snapping turtles get really old.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, don't they still have some that have like Civil War musket balls still embedded in their shell?
That's a good question. I've heard that, but I don't, I I thought it was, but maybe it's not snapping turtles, but I thought it was.
But yeah, so these things can live incredibly old.
I wonder what the max weight, I got a computer right here, I guess I could look it up, but I just wonder what the max age of, like, let's say a snapping turtle would be.
I don't know, but I know that, like, leatherback turtles, which are the largest form of turtle, I believe, they're the ones that live out in the middle of the ocean. They can get up to 1,500 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
6 foot long. Have you ever seen, like, the inside of their throat?
That's what I had come by me that time when it was eating all that stuff.
Have you seen the inside of their throat? It looks like the sand monster in Return of the Jedi that they're throwing people in.
Yes.
That's what it looks like.
I've got to look this up. The lifespan of a snapping turtle.
That they know of, right?
That they know of. Yeah, let's see.
I like to believe this is a leftover prehistoric snapping turtle.
So it's not the snapping turtle that lives forever. This one just says the average lifespan of a snapping turtle is in the wild 30 to 50 years, while in captivity up to 57.
Oh, for some reason I thought it was like a couple hundred.
Maybe it's a tortoises that live longer than turtles.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm
thinking. That's probably what's going on. Some turtle nut is going crazy screaming at us right now for being idiots.
Whatever happened to that turtle man? Remember that guy? Live action. Remember
I don't know.
Guy?
I think he's still doing it. I think Turtle Man's still out there killing the game.
Maybe he ran into this turtle. And
maybe
that's the
he
end
did.
Of it.
But why? Look, again, like we always talk about. Yeah, you don't want to run into the 500-pound snapping turtle. Like we always talk about. We laugh. I know it sounds insane, but for some reason, it just makes sense to me that they would be a turtle, let's say that size, right, hiding out.
Yeah.
That's been back there forever.
And like a good fishing story, maybe the story's been over-embellished. You know, even the person writing in admits that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, yeah, right.
And sometimes you see things at night, say it's a full moon, and you see what you think is it's ginormous, and really it's not that big. It's happened to me. I've shot pigs at like 150 yards that I thought were a whopper, and then you get up to them, and you're like, man, this thing isn't even 100 pounds.
Ground shrinkage gets them, right?
So, yeah. I mean, easily I could see something like that happen. But we did know it was big enough to be eating feral pigs.
Well, exactly. Well, yeah, that's what he's basically said, is it was eating one of those.
You know, when you were first describing the story and something shot out and grabbed the pig, I was thinking like the jaws inside of like a xenomorph.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's just the turtle's head.
Or like
head.
A pseudopod slapped up and grabbed it and drugged the thing back in.
That's where I thought you were going with the story, but it turned
I'm
going
to give you a short one.
Okay.
Since we're talking about giant animals. All right. Hugo writes in and says, in 2017, I was working at a summer camp near Hancock, New York. One day I went out with the boss to go buy supplies. I took the opportunity for a drive out of the camp. Everything was normal. I didn't experience anything except for this one trip. We're driving back in her car at night, and suddenly this huge, I'm guessing animal, run out on the road in front and stopped right in front of the car. Luckily, she wasn't driving very fast, so we could stop in time. When I looked, there was this weird creature that was higher than her bonnet. So we can already tell from the UK. Higher than her bonnet. The only thing it resembled slightly was a skunk, but way too big for a skunk. I'm from the UK. Oh, nailed it. And I'm not sure what her car was, but it's the size of a Vauxhall Corsa. For size comparison.
I have no idea what that is.
Thing is, my boss is pretty straightforward and straight to the point, never scared of anything. That's one reason I loved her. However, she would not discuss what this thing was. If I asked her about it, she would either snap it was nothing or completely change the subject. I'm just wondering if anyone knows of any legends or anything in that area between Hancock and Friendwoods, New York.
Of a giant
skunk? A giant skunk.
That's crazy.
Now, there's nothing I know of that would be that big black that you could mistaken for a skunk.
Yeah, me either.
Right? For a giant. That's like you're talking about a big 3 foot tall skunk.
My wife wants a skunk as a pet.
She's married to one.
She found some place that descents them or whatever, and they're supposed to be good pets.
Man.
Of course, she's crazy. So.
That's true.
Speaking of crazy, check this out. It says, one evening back in high school, in the early 2000s, a couple of friends and I drove out to a very rural spot to go hang out. This is where all the stories start, folks, right? Isn't this the common
I know
thread.
A spot. This is how it always starts. I know a spot.
There wasn't much to do in my small hometown in rural Indiana, so these country cruises, as we call them, to random locations were normally the highlight of our weekend.
A little Mad Dog 2020?
There were little Boone's Farm.
Strawberry Hill?
There was lots of these spots that we frequented. Some more secluded than others. We decided to go to a spot known as Green Valley. It was a public lake and fishing area, so it technically was closed at night. Not that it mattered, because there wasn't a gate, and cops rarely came out there. Plus, many Jeep trails lead back into the woods. So if you're in a four-wheel drive vehicle, which we were, it's fairly easy to find a spot to park and hide from view. By the time we had arrived, it was nearly dark. So we pulled into the main area of the lake, drove around to the back side, and entered the woods via one of those Jeep trails. It had been raining a few days before. The trails were muddy, even without rain, and had deep ruts in some spots from past visitors who were there mudding. Yes, it's exactly what it sounds like. We drove big trucks and Jeeps through mud pits in an attempt to get the vehicles as dirty as possible. Like I said, I lived in a very small town. We didn't want to get stuck, so we stayed relatively close to the entrance of the trail. We drove back far enough to be hidden from view, killed the Jeep, turned on the radio, and proceeded to roll up a few, you know, things to smoke. My two girlfriends and I smoked, talked, and laughed about meaningless random things. We were just having a good old time, when suddenly, something hit the roof of my Jeep. But not too loudly, but enough to make me look in the direction of the noise. I rolled the window down, but didn't hear or see anything, and my friends seemed to not even notice. I continued our conversation when a few minutes later, some small thing made a strange sound. This time, the sound came from the windshield, and this time my friends heard it as well. After they questioned, "What's that noise?" I decided to be the brave one and go investigate. I assumed it was most likely acorns or walnuts falling from the trees overhead. I turned on the headlights, opened the door, and stepped out. After looking at the hood of my Jeep, I noticed a small gray rock lodged near the windshield wipers. I picked it up and showed them. We immediately recognized the rock. The front parking lot of the lake was made entirely of them. I quickly climbed back into my Jeep and rolled up the window. Assuming someone was messing with us, we decided it was time to pack it up and head out. Lots of meth heads around in this area, and we were not trying to get robbed or stabbed by someone in the woods. I started the Jeep, turned off the radio. I know I'm not the only one who turns down the car radio when treacherous situations arise, and began to carefully navigate down the short trail toward the back of the lake. All of a sudden, we were barraged with rocks, much larger than the initial ones, all hitting the driver's side of my vehicle. I would have been pissed, but right now, I was only trying to get out of there. I heard the sound, and I'll never forget it. It sounded like, I don't know, I can't explain it. It was like a loud roar, is the only way I can describe it. And it was too close to the Jeep when I heard it. I think it sounded kind of like a male lion at a feline sanctuary I once visited, but with my husband years later. It was full of bass and lasted roughly 7 seconds or so. It was also fairly close to the Jeep. It was trying to get out of there. I floored it. We had almost reached the trail entrance when I was driving way too fast when suddenly something slammed into the side of my Jeep, hard enough to make me fishtail a bit. Followed by the same sound we heard the first time, only higher pitched, almost like it had been injured. I slammed on the brakes and the typical panicked conversation between us began. You know, the one like, "What the heck is that? Did we hit a deer? That wasn't a deer. Let's go." I quickly continued down the trail and was finally at the lake when my friend in the back seat was screaming, "Look, look." My friend was in the front seat and I looked out of my driver's side window to see a man running through the woods towards the lake. I only say man because it most definitely was on two legs and had the shape of a person. Only this person wasn't moving at an unnatural speed, though. Deep mud and trees and thorn bushes, and their proportions seemed to be greatly off. This thing had longer arms and longer legs with an average torso. We watched in silence as this man reached the edge of the lake, bent over, and ran on all fours using his hands, and then it leaped into the water. Now, it was early October, and while it wasn't freezing, the water was definitely ice cold. We got the heck out of there. We drove 70 miles per hour on the back roads until we reached town. At the first gas station, we pulled over and got out of the Jeep. There was a small dent near the back end of the driver's side. I lied to my parents and said that I accidentally backed into a pole. We decided it was best not to tell anyone about our encounter. We didn't want to sound insane. But every time that I looked at that dent, I thought about it. I went back to that area multiple times during high school, but we never saw anything. But through the years, I've heard others seeing peculiar things there, including one story of a group of kids seeing a man shoot himself while sitting in his car. They went to call the cops and came back to find nothing. B. So,
yikes.
Like a pack of wild Sasquatch. Didn't want them out there hanging out in their woods, right?
Nothing like a pack of Sasquatch to ruin your day.
Imagine seeing something like that running on your legs and then going to all fours.
No, absolutely not. I can't.
Pushing the Jeep, causing it to fishtail.
No thanks.
Incredible story. Let's take a break. When we get back from the break, we can continue with the madness. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
With some more wildness. Hey, that was some fun, real unsettling stories.
Oh, yeah, right? I can't imagine, you know, being chased out of the woods by whatever. Doesn't want you there. A pack of dog man or Sasquatch or whatever it was.
So I've got one for you. As far as we're talking about woods, you would just run from the woods if you hear this. This kind of goes back into some stories that you've told in the past. Wilson sends in, it says, many years ago, my nephew and I went for a camping fishing trip out in Cumberland, Maryland. There's a state campground that is located on the Potomac River. These sites are dispersed for the most part, and not many people were camping. We drove down to the end of the campground to the last campsite, far away from the other campers, set up camp, and everything was normal. It was quiet, with the exception of normal sounds in the forest. Then, at around 10 or 11 at night, we heard the sound of a woman singing in the woods. Not a song that you could recognize. It was more of a melody without words. I heard it, my nephew heard it, and my dog heard it. My dog was lying down by the fire, jumps up, and starts just staring into the woods. I look over at my nephew, and he looks freaked out. I ask him if he heard the woman singing, and he says, I don't hear anything, and I'm going to bed. Which is a total lie, because he's about 10 feet away from me, and it was pretty loud. It sounded as if it was coming from one direction, but also no direction in particular. I've read about disembodied voices, and maybe that's what we heard, but it sounded like someone maybe 20 to 30 foot away. It wasn't scary or ominous, but it was a little unsettling. I told my nephew that we should walk around and see what it was, but he wasn't interested. And after a few minutes, it just stopped. Now, I can say for sure that nobody was hiding in the woods. I've camped with my dog for years, and he was very alert to things moving around there in the woods, and he would have made it known to someone that they weren't welcome. It was strange that he didn't bark or growl. He just stood up and stared into the woods just like I did. I tried to find out online about similar experiences, but didn't come up with anything. Strange experience for sure.
To some woman?
Well, it said it really wasn't words, but it was more of a melody. It sounds
fae-like.
Exactly. That's what it sounds like. Very fae-like.
That's what they like to do. They try to lure you into the woods.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they always talk about the songs and chants and stuff that the fae folk do. That's what it sounds like to me.
Creepy fae singing. Well, and it does. It just fits. It just fits.
Speaking of creepy, check this out. Back in 2017, I went on a family vacation to Fairfield Bay, Arkansas.
That's definitely creepy.
We were staying
in a raised... Oh, that's not the main part. Sorry.
We were staying in a raised cabin. A golf course was behind the cabin, which was along the side of a forest. The first day there was absolutely great. We went back to the cabin and we got our stuff unpacked. And I was staying in a loft above the living room. It had windows above the roof to look out of, like a split-level roof-type situation. I turned off the TV and went to bed. No problem. I woke up in the middle of the night for no reason. I lay on my side, so I have a straight shot out the window across from my sister. In that window was this pale, emaciated humanoid thing sitting on the lower roof. I froze in fear, willing myself not to move in fear that this thing might try to get in. It cupped its hands around its face like people do trying to see out a window into the dark. It sat there and just watched for a minute that felt like an eternity until the thing turned and crawled on all fours down the side of the cabin. presumably back to the woods. I sat there still frozen for another minute or two, just to be sure that this thing was gone. The only thing keeping me from running to my parents' room was that the entire living room was lined with curtainless windows and the thing that just crawled down that way. I didn't want it to see me. I had to turn the TV on to get back to bed that night. The thing was about child size, and I am positive, as an adult, wouldn't have problems scaling down the cabin. I had just enough light to see its form and what it was doing. It was really skinny, almost all bones. It was doing that kind of crouching thing where people kind of sit on their feet. You can imagine how sleeping in that cabin felt for the next 5 days. I couldn't sleep in my parents' room because they didn't believe me. They said it was just a bad dream, but it wasn't, because the TV was still on when I woke up. I had to sleep up there for the rest of the trip, waking up around the same time every night and then having to turn the TV on just to get back to sleep. I carried the fear of this thing for many years, thinking I would see it again in my basement or somewhere down the street or out while I was taking the trash out. Watching shows with things that look like things almost like this puts me in tears, and I don't scare easily. After reading other accounts online and listening to podcasts, I feel as much fear now as I did back then, but I also feel better knowing that other people have had similar experiences. A.
Woo!
She saw like a pale crawler.
A crawler.
They're so creepy.
They are so creepy. I've got one I want to leave you with here. That Lon posted this up from a person named B, sent this in. And this is just something that's right up our alley. It says, when I was a teenager, we went away for a week of camping at the Hidden Valley Scout Reservation in Perry County, Pennsylvania. My dad was our scoutmaster, and we were mostly all friends from growing up. But there was this one kid, Alex, the youngest, that we didn't really know well and was definitely kind of weird, withdrawn, and awkward, just kind of different, but was still such a sweet guy that everyone liked him. So towards the end of the week, we went out on an overnight, just the scouts, without my dad or his buddy, who was our other scout leader. We hiked for hours into the brush. It was a really hot day, and my older brother was leading us, but not drinking any water and wearing a light jacket, of course, which made him extra hot. So eventually, we found a sweet spot next to the river. We made a fire, cooked dinner, and we all soon fell asleep under the stars. Around 4:30 in the morning, just before sunrise, my friend Steve woke me up and asked if I knew where Alex was. I said no, that maybe he went to the bathroom. But after 5 minutes, he wasn't back, so we got up and started looking around and calling his name. Nothing. So we ranged a little further, and then I saw his sleeping bag at the edge of the river. I freaked out and ran over to see if I could see anything at the bottom, but I saw nothing. We tried to get my brother up, but he was pretty sick from the heat, so I took charge of the situation. We started ranging out into the woods and calling his name. One of the guys started doing the emergency whistle call, 3 short whistles. But we were really in the middle of nowhere. I started going deeper into the woods, calling his name, and then I thought I heard something. I stopped and listened and heard a faint cry deep in the woods. So I started running, crashing through thick undergrowth, getting lashed in the face with branches and stumbling across fallen logs. His cries got louder, and eventually I arrived at this huge clearing in the woods to find him sitting on a fallen tree in his underwear and t-shirt. He said he had been there for hours, having woken up on the ground in the dark and having no idea where he was. He just sat there, waiting it out, waiting for dawn. It was really spooky. The craziest thing was that his watch had been reset, so he didn't know what time it actually was. We all accepted that it was probably sleepwalking, but he was so far in the woods and didn't have a scratch on him. And this clearing was so bizarre because it was big and round in the middle of these really dense woods. And to this day, I still wonder what really happened.
Huh.
What could that even be? Unless it's a UFO, unless it's an abduction story.
Yeah.
Or it's like the missing 411.
Well, and when I think of circles like that, I think of like fairy circles. There's always strange things that go around like that. We did a whole episode, like, I don't remember, it was a couple of years ago, where these deer hunters found this like circle in the middle of the woods, and there was like strange things happening.
The only thing that makes me think not is because he didn't walk there. They said that he didn't have a scratch on him. He was just sitting there. He woke up and just sat there. So something carried him or moved him through the woods.
That's true. So that is more like missing 411 stories,
right? Something crazy. Yep. I mean, it's like we always talk about those kids, right? And they're just like gone. And I'm not saying it says anywhere in here about autism or any of that, but we've also, they've noticed that autistic kids are a lot of the kids that will be taken.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's strange, but it's like, you know, when you're out in the woods, those are the ones. And those are the children that usually they still find.
They always, right? But they're just like, they find more of the children than the adults. Do you think it's just the adults fight and the kids don't? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it might be. Or, there might be something to that, yeah.
Because, like, there's lots of these cases where these kids go missing, then they're found later, an incredibly far distance away. Their clothes are on backwards, like something they didn't know.
Well, just like his watch was set funny.
Right.
So he wouldn't know what time it was. Who thinks of that?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That is crazy. Well, you're fixing to head out of town.
Yep, I'm fixing to head out of town. I'm going to Corpus Christi.
The Gulf of America.
Going down there. My wife has some work to do down there with her company that she's with and all that. So I'm going to go down there and I just hang out, be supportive.
You going to do any fishing? You going to do any disc golfing? It's a lot warmer down there.
The weather down there is a lot warmer. The whole thing. I'm going to definitely do some fishing and I might take a few discs for disc golf. I don't know yet. I am going to take my bow. There's an archery shop down there. I'm going to go do some shooting at. But yeah, we'll be down there a few days and that'll be that. That's kind of the trouble I'm going to be in.
You could do both. You could do bow fishing.
Oh, that would be so much fun.
I think we got a bow fishing trip planned for the summer.
Yeah. We got one coming up.
I can't wait to do that.
I cannot wait.
If you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam and the listeners, you can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. Let's not forget about our wonderful sponsors. HelloFresh. Get up to 10 free meals and a free high-protein item for life at HelloFresh.com/expanded10FM. One item per box with active subscription. Free meals applied as discount on the first box. New subscribers only, varies by plan. That's up to 10 free HelloFresh meals. That's HelloFresh.com/expanded10FM. It is America's number one meal kit. And AG1, it's never too late to create a new healthy habit for 2025. So try AG1 for yourself. It's something we've actually been able to stay consistent with, and that's why we've been partnering with AG1 for so long. AG1 is offering new subscribers a free $76 gift when you sign up. You'll get a welcome kit, a bottle of D3K2, and 5 free travel packs in your first box. So make sure to check out drinkag1.com/expanded to get this offer. Cam, you got anything else before we get out of here?
No, sir. Just trying to stay out of trouble and prepare myself for the crazy weather we got ahead.
If you want to help out the show and you want more Expanded Perspectives, don't forget about our Patreon, Expanded Perspectives Elite. You can download the Patreon app, or you can just go to patreon.com/expandedperspectivesElite. You can sign up over there. We, like Cam said at the beginning of the show, we posted up a video over there. If you want to see what we look like in studio, you can go check that out. Also, you can give the gift of Elite by going to patreon.com/expandedperspectivesElite/gift. So I hope that helps everybody. I hope everybody has a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.